Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are doing our wrap-up session for Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, where we answer a variety of questions in regards to this specific book. So, Jess.
Yes.
Before we get into the questions that we had, you know, mapped out for each other, just general thoughts on the book in general, as a whole, how it fit into what you knew from pop culture, and what was different, what was surprised you, what you did you like?
You know, there were a lot more, well, I guess we could kind of call Lupin a gothic monster because he's a werewolf. So in that regard, I appreciated that. I appreciated some of the more adult elements. Didn't like the almost death of Buckbeak. I think this was also the one where Snape was like threatening Neville's frog. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I did not like the animal cruelty. But overall, I think the story is just, of course, as they mature, they're getting... The darkness continues to come through. No giant spiders in this one, so I was pretty psyched about that as well. I liked it. I'm sure once we get through them all, I'll have a favorite. This one did a good job of leaving me wanting more and kind of, you know, being like, forcing myself to stop reading to not go any further and to wait so we could have like the unspoiled discussion. But how about your reread of this?
Just kind of reiterated that, yeah, this is my favorite of the first three. And I think the way Harry the writer wrote them is he really wrote the first three books in a very compact way that in itself they could be just a trilogy.
Mm.
Because with Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, in the very first few chapters, we get Hagrid mentioning Sirius Black.
Without
any context. So that's already planted the seed. We get in the first book, you know, Harry talking to the boa constrictor in the zoo. And so that ties into Chamber of Secrets. So just everything is very tightly wound up, I feel like, within the first three books, you know, thematically and, you know, laying foundation for various plot elements and, you know, things like that. But so which is your favorite of the three?
So far? Definitely this one. That was definitely, you know, the gothic elements, which is, as y'all may know, kind of how Amy and I connected, were very strong in this. And I love a ghost. I think I've said that a million times on Sublimely Gothic. So even if the ghost isn't really a ghost, I enjoy it. And so we had that with The Shrieking Shack. So this one by far, I am ready for the series to break the formula. And I think that's coming in the next book. Like starting with the Dursley chapter ending, you know, in a certain way, they put like an additional chapter in the books that I have, and I saw the next chapter title and I was like, that's not Dursley. So, and then I just left it there. So I'm excited to move on to the, you know, the next four books.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about in terms of just pure mystery level, in terms of comparing the mystery of Sirius and everything that went on with him, comparing it to them figuring out the things about the Philosopher's Stone and likewise with Riddle's diary?
I think this is the part of your question I didn't answer. As far as the pop culture stuff, I, you know, like I said, I knew Sirius wasn't bad. You know, I knew he had, there was something good about him. And I also knew that he was an Animagi and turned into, I thought, a werewolf for a while, but a dog. I knew werewolf was somewhere. So that little kind of mystery toward the end with the who Wormtail, Prongs, and the other names I forget were kind of those little things, the mini mysteries, I guess I would say, were interesting. I feel like I can't give a fair assessment to the bigger mystery of this book because I went into it kind of knowing how it came out. But as a mystery reader yourself, what, like, kind of, how did you feel about it?
I think there's a definite ascending order where the mystery elements get more complex because, again, the mystery in Sorcerer's Philosopher's Stone is quite simple in the sense that Harry's just entering this world. He has no context of this world. And so he's like learning everything like brand new. And again, it's very surface level of course, this bad guy wants a stone that makes him immortal. That's right. Voldemort's a basic bitch.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's pretty cliche bad guy stuff right there. So.
And then we get more complexity in Chamber of Secrets with Tom Riddle's diary, and we start to get an evolution of it's not just a specific object, valuable object that the bad guy wants. It's a more subtle terroristic motivation.
Yeah.
And we get more history.
That I forget how sinister that diary was in the second book because of the power it kind of takes over Jenny. That's pretty, yeah. That is, I would say, almost a much darker element than anything in The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah. And then when we get to Prisoner of Azkaban, the mystery is so complex because it's not as deep into the history at like pure like number of years because Tom Riddle's diary was 50 years old and everything that we were dealing with was, you know, 50 years ago. This is much more recent, like, you know, near 15 years ago with, you know, but it's so much more complex with the nature of the relationship between these four friends and one of them betrayed. And then on the side, we've got Snape being a pain in the ass, both in the past and in the present.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And just all of those weaving together and make it. Yeah. There's just a steady evolution in the mystery elements getting more and more complex and more subplots, you know, holding weight in the final big reveal.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked that. I thought that was, fun. And I also know, and having talked to Amanda and Kevin, they say, you know, we'll get like the crumbs and then they pay off later. So that's kind of what I'm also thinking in the back of my mind. I'm like, what wasn't answered here? And I can't think of something off the top of my head. Well, where the hell did Peter Pettigrew go? We don't know that yet. So no, that's how we ended that.
All righty then. But yeah, I'm just trying to think of general thoughts. Yeah, I think I already said, again, the big thing about, again, the way you and I diverge in terms of our gothic leanings are very much represented in, I like Prisoner of Azkaban better than Chamber of Secrets, but when it comes to pure gothic stuff, I mentioned that Chamber of Secrets is much more old school architectural, and Prisoner of Azkaban is much more the modern horror, and so that's definitely how we diverge in terms of what we like.
Yes, yes. And talking to our friend Morgan, I talked to him this week and I was like, I see he is very well versed in different types of modern horror and things like that. And there's just like a cutoff for me. It's got to be like kind of campy. When it tilts into the tortury stuff, I'm like not there. So this is the good level for me. I can take maybe like one degree up and then I kind of have to check out.
So let us get into our wrap-up questions. So question number one, what was your favorite chapter in the third book and why?
My favorite chapter, and I really appreciate Amy sent me these questions in advance so I didn't have to sit here and go, So I appreciate that. I really liked Talons and Tea Leaves, and the reason being. I thought it brought a new perspective to some of the characters, that aspects of their personalities that we didn't really think about, and also kind of revealed the prejudice of toward the divination practice that I don't, you know, I didn't fully comprehend. We talked about it a little bit, but I think Hermione's, you know, kind of passive aggressive way of handling it in the class was, it was just very interesting to see her react so strongly. And then that's also the chapter where they talk to McGonagall, and McGonagall's like, which one of you is going to die this year? And it was just such an interesting, I feel like so many things in the wizarding world thus far have been held in like high regard, or there's nothing that's,
no element of magic that's considered bogus in such a way.
Yeah, or kind of shunned, or kind of like people turn their nose up at it. It's all this kind of like, oh, this is so great. And then we get to divination and people are like, what is that? And I feel like too, just having had a foot in the metaphysical world a little bit, that's the general attitude of the, you know, the world we live in as well. So I liked the kind of magical realism or whatever element of that particular chapter. And then a close second would have been the Marauder's Map chapter.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I like the whole notion of divination being treated with a certain amount of disdain and dismissal. You know, because as a practicing pagan and, you know, doing tarot, even though I'm kind of lighter on the, like, quote-unquote magic or fortune-telling side, like, it is something to say about people who stick their nose up at all this stuff. And I'm thinking, like, I will only take criticism of these sort of divinatory practices from a full-fledged, like, atheist. Because if there's a Christian who's going to say, like, tarot cards are crap, but you believe a guy rose from the dead.
Preach. I know, what a word choice, but that is exactly how I feel. And I think that's why I'm curious about it. I don't read tarot, but I also, you know, I have had my cards read. I look at astrology, things like that. So I think maybe that's a little bit too. It's you and I's an interest of both of ours. And then to have Hermione like talking mad shit about divination, it's like, check yourself, girl. Like this, there's something to it. But yeah. Oh, the last thing I think I would say about the Talons and Tea Leaves is there's more information about the Dementors, which were such a big part of this book, obviously, just kind of how they operate, how they suck the joy out of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that chapter. That is my pick for this book. How about you?
My favorite was chapter 14, Snape's Grudge.
Okay, all right.
I liked it because, as you know, I hate Snape, and you know, I could go on a whole rant. But as I get an adult, I appreciate his complexity. Still doesn't excuse a lot of the shit that he does, but I appreciate him as a very multidimensional character and one of the most interesting characters of English literature, and will be one of the most top five most interesting characters of the 21st century.
I know that you have said like you're like not Team Snape, and other people have been like, oh, Snape, I have a soft spot for him. But when we've talked to Amanda and Kevin, Amanda has felt the same way. This isn't you guys like putting Kevin and I on, is it? Like there's not going to be a big reveal where it's like, oh, actually he's just a poor soul. This is genuine. Or is this just influenced by the first couple books? Or you don't want to say. Totally fine.
I don't know. Okay. I'm going to decline to answer.
Okay. But
yeah, because here with Snape, and also just the pure, again, good mystery writing on Harry's part, because even when I read this for the first time, like, there's such a loaded conversation between Snape and Lupin, and so you know shit's going down, but you don't know what it is. So right. You just really like that suspenseful element, and again, adding further confusion of what history do these two characters have? You know, again, Snape's making the potion for him, but clearly he hates his guts.
Right.
And all of those things.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was a fair answer to that question. So I appreciate that.
Question number two, what was your least favorite chapter and why?
This may come as a shock to no one, but Aunt Marge's big mistake was my least favorite chapter. I generally hate the Dursley chapters because I generally just don't like those characters. In this one, I think I had some secondhand like heartache for Harry because his aunt was so demeaning and ruthless to him as well. And then, you know, they're just so nasty to him and nobody comes to his defense. And I feel like thus far, every book is like, you go on this magical journey, you have all these great experiences, and then you're kind of like knocked back to reality in the worst way. It's not even knocked back to reality. It's just straight up child abuse in most of these chapters. And then the Quidditch chapter, you know, the Quidditch part of the Quidditch final chapter, it just never does anything for me. So I'm pretty predictable in my least favorites, I think.
Yeah, because I think with the Dursley chapters, of course, you hate them. But with Aunt Marge, it's like you didn't think the Dursleys could get worse.
Right.
But Aunt Marge is proof that, ew, it could have definitely gotten worse.
She just kind of kept that level. I got used to some of the Dursley immediate family nastiness. Mm-hmm. And then we added another character.
Which to a certain extent is based, rooted in indifference, both in terms of, which has its own sense of, you know, damage and implications and repercussions. But part of their indifference is rooted in fear of Harry, where Marge, who is totally oblivious, doesn't know about Harry's one playing card that Harry can leverage with the immediate family of the Dursleys.
Right, right. And he kind of even has to keep that, he has to keep it on lock. And I think this is a chapter where he even kind of mutters a word and mm-hmm. people flip out. So,
yeah.
What about you?
Again, no surprise, my least favorite chapter was the Quidditch final, because up until this point, this is the only Quidditch chapter that I deem totally Quidditch and irrelevant to the rest of the story. Every other Quidditch chapter up to this point has had a legitimate role to play in the plot, like with Sorcerer's Stone, it was, you know, Harry almost getting bunked off his broom by Quirrell. Second time, it was Dobby's bludger. The first game we went through, it was him falling off the broom because the Dementor. So all things relevant to the plot. The Quidditch final, though, nothing to do with the plot. And as I ranted in that particular episode about if they're trying to inflate the victory of the Quidditch as trying to compensate for all the shitty things Snape has done, that Draco has done, and it just, like, it doesn't, you know, it didn't satisfy me.
I checked that chapter before I made it my, like, second part that I didn't like, because I'm like, Amy always points out that something happens during the Quidditch chapter, but I think we both talked about nothing, you know, interesting happens during this one, so.
Yeah, Quidditch served as a pure release of frustrated energy for a 13-year-old, which, again, necessary for his mental health, but did I need to go through it? No.
Right. Yeah. People don't need to read about my, I don't know what I do. My morning run sometimes, I guess. I don't know.
Question number 3. Who is your favorite character outside the Golden Trio?
This was probably one of the easiest questions to answer. I was going to say Hagrid, but I thought, you know, I have to go somebody new. So is Lupin. Because Lupin
too.
Is, yes. How can you not like him? He's a great character. He's got a good, like, demeanor. I feel like just in general, if more people were like Lupin and Dumbledore, the world would be a much better place. Even-keeled, supportive, you know, logical, all these it's funny to say he's pretty emotionally centered when he has this one big emotional moment every month, you know, where he just like can't control himself. But for the most part, I think the rest of his time, pretty even keeled. And his kind of introduction was interesting. It wasn't, you know, because he's basically asleep on the train with the kids. And then, you know, we have the Dementor encounter, but all around pretty interesting. I liked Lupin a lot.
Yeah, in terms of his emotional centeredness, like, a part of me wonders, is that genuinely a part of his personality? Or is that something he has had to craft for social survival? Because if he, even in his normal human state, comes off as very abrasive And, you know, with the pre-existing stigma that exists, he's just not going to get anywhere. So part of it, I feel like, is an overcompensation of, see, like, I'm not a savage creature most of the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess I don't want to get too heavy, but I know I have a, I had a coworker who was a Black woman and kind of talking about how she had to be, felt like she had to be extra measured in her reactions because she didn't want to be perceived as the angry Black woman. And I think that's an interesting, you know, he didn't want to be seen as a crazy werewolf, I guess. So he had to make sure he was extra even keeled.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. So yeah, it was the same for me for similar reasons. And again, he was just a really good teacher. Just, yeah, overall just a good person. Felt bad for Harry. He wasn't going to Hogsmeade, so invited him in for tea. Like, is for being shunned the way he is by society, remarkably emotionally intelligent.
Yes, very much so. I hope we, and I am not going to look or listen to anything. You don't have to say anything. I hope we see Lupin again. I have a feeling we will, but I shall find out.
Okay. Question number 4. What was your least favorite character outside the Golden Trio?
I wonder if ours will be the same. Snape. Because he was a dick. And he wasn't, he did not make himself any more likable.
Okay, that's it. Show's over, folks.
So it's done. I was going to say Peter Pettigrew, but then I felt like he was...
He's still important. Very new.
Yes, he's new and there is something there because they wouldn't... he moved... I don't know enough about him. I didn't particularly like him, but I know there's more... And like you said, there's not enough to know about him. But Snape just made himself more unlikable in these chapters. He didn't have it. He tried to have a moment, but he, you know, we talked about he played the victim. He did all these things that just, I was like, nah, let's get out of here. How about you?
My least favorite character was Draco Malfoy.
I basically forgot he was even in these this book at this point because there was so much... You know, he was at the beginning of the book. But anyway, why Draco?
Because I feel like Draco is a little brat and he's gaining power and social awareness that he can use his position and his daddy to wreak havoc on the world. And I think the fact that he was willing and was gleeful at the prospect that I was the one who facilitated the death of this creature. Is a certain level of...
Yeah. I forgot he was like the impetus for all of that. You know, his...
Because he was already classist and everything and clearly did not like that Hagrid should be a professor, and even wanting to get Hagrid fired would still be in his line of character. But again, wanting to take it to the point of killing an animal, like, that is...
Not a fan of that.
Yeah, it was just gross.
It was very gross. That is a great reason to not like that character that I completely forgot about, apparently.
Question number 5. What was your favorite magical item that appeared in the book?
Well, I'd also like to talk about my least favorite magical item just because the map I really liked, the Marauder's map. That was pretty cool. Very iconic Harry Potter, you know, item, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of was thinking about Google Maps now in a modern world and how you can like share your location with somebody if you give permission. I'm sure you can just have it out there all the time if you really want, but... That is kind of a, I really liked that. And I liked the history behind it and the camaraderie and just the whole story behind that item was pretty cool. And the time turner I did not like at all. I mean, I understood its purpose, but I just thought it was confusing. So.
Yeah. So was Marauder's Map your favorite?
Marauder's Map was my favorite. Yes. The time turner was my, I did not like the time turner. So.
Mine was also the Marauder's Map because, again, it's a nifty little piece of, and again, it's so iconic in Harry Potter lore. And again, it was hard between, I don't dislike the Time Turner with the same propensity as you do, like, as an item that exists in this magical world. Like, yeah, I think it's, you know, okay and kind of makes sense, again, implying a cyclical nature of time or whatever. I my whole problem with it is not the item itself, is the fact of how irresponsible McGonagall was in giving it to a 13-year-old.
I think, yeah, you know, I think that that's probably my problem as well, because when I sit there and I think about it, I mean, like, because as far as we know, it has a limit of, like, going 3 hours back, right? So you can't do too much damage. But I think I agree with you in the it's utilization of giving, like, stressing out a teen stresses me out.
Yeah. But yeah, my favorite was also the Marauder's Map. And then question number 6, what was your favorite spell from this book?
It's pretty hard not to say the Patronus spell, right? Like, that was that's pretty cool. And again, pretty iconic. And now that we're talking about it, just thinking of all the little things that come from this book. Also we get some emotional connection from Harry, thinking it was, you know, his dad that he saw. His Patronus is the stag. I feel like that's, I don't know. It's the Patronus one. It's a cool charm. I wish we could do that to defeat a Dementor or a bad thing. So
yeah. Mine was also, of course, the Patronus charm. Because in this book, there's less of those, like, tangible things, like, that we have our questions based off of. There's less, like, Marauder's Map, Patronus Charm. Like, this book had very specific items. It was much more selective in the items they chose to introduce to us, rather than, because the plot is all about people and the interrelationships and the past between people. Like, that was the main focus, rather than books 1 and 2, where there was significantly more variety of items to be introduced and to be utilized. And then question number 7, what was your favorite creature that appeared in Prisoner of Azkaban?
It was Crookshanks, because I love cats and I'm like, cats can do no wrong. Was real stressed out with Mrs. Norris in book 2. But Crookshanks started off as everybody thought, you know, what a jerk. He killed Scabbers and actually turned out to be very helpful. Helpful magical creature. So not the, like, you know, I was thinking about the hippogriff and I was kind of like, I mean, the hippogriff is fine, but it's not a dragon, you know? So we had a dragon, Norbert. So I liked Crookshanks, a magical cat, and, you know, in the end, good intentions. So
yeah, my favorite was Buckbeak the hippogriff, just because, because I do like horses so much. And again, our sort of magical creatures were limited, again, in the same vein as the hippogriff was the main creature introduced for the sake of the plot. Patronus Charm was introduced for the sake of the plot. Marauder's Map was introduced for the sake of the plot.
Right. It was all, yes, 100%.
And then question number 8, what do you think was the most gothic element in Prisoner of Azkaban?
I feel like I kind of banged on about this a lot, so it's pretty easy to... Again, an easy one for me, but it was the Shrieking Shack for its metaphorical and literal gothicness. It to me was the haunted house is just something that's so, without even reading into it too much, that's just a pillar of gothic literature. So that one was an easy one for me. It also, you know, the people, I loved the way that the wizard world thought it was haunted, you know, that's how, and they were scared of it. These people that kind of live in a world where ghosts are just kind of there and it's not a big deal, but they were too freaked out by it. And then in the end, it turns out to be where Sirius goes to kind of, or sorry, where Lupin goes. I got my canines confused, to transform or whatever. It was Sirius. It was Lupin, right? Lupin would go there.
In the past, yeah, like Sirius, when he escaped, like, he was kind of splitting his time between the shack and the forest, you know, while he was, you know, on the lam.
But Lupin was the reason for the kind of people wondering what was going on there.
Okay. Yeah, of why building that, all those rumors about.
Okay. So even though I forgot who was there, I think that was my most gothic element from this book. How about you?
My favorite was the apparition of the Grimm and the like whole idea of the Grimm. And even though it follows a very Anne Radcliffe sort of way where you think it's a supernatural thing and they describe it as being a death omen in a way where it seems to be, if it were truly a death omen, only Harry would be able to see it. It's not something that sentiently exist outside of Harry, you know, right. in that way. So the fact that it did actually become just a dog and, you know, irrelevant, but, you know, became Sirius Black, that follows Anne Radcliffe's old classic format of introducing something, hyping it up as supernatural, and then finally at the end we get a rational, logical explanation.
That's good. The Grimm, yeah, they talk about, and then they kind of touch on that in the divination class, right? They're elements of the Black Dog throughout. So good one. I like that too.
Question number 9. What was your favorite quote from the third book?
Well, it was the Dumbledore quote, because it's probably always going to be a Dumbledore quote from me. It was, "The consequences of our actions are always so complicated, so diverse, that predicting the future is a very difficult business indeed." And that was toward the end of the book, because Dumbledore only really kind of shows up in a big significant way toward the end, when they're kind of rehashing Sirius's escape. So
when you were saying that, it made me think of, it's tying into the whole notion of divination, which in this world has been portrayed as hogwash.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a segment of a quote. And he's talking about Professor Trelawney and her predictions and kind of everything around that. So that was my favorite. I couldn't think of anything else off the top of my head. There's some things that are funny that I kind of forgot about, but that one stood out to me the most.
My favorite is also a Dumbledore quote, and don't worry, as things progress, more people, you know, will be introduced in the books and more people will say badass things.
Okay.
You know, my favorite Dumbledore quotes are always about death. So,
okay.
So the famous one is, "You think the dead we love ever truly leave us? You think that we don't recall them more clearly than ever in times of great trouble? Your father is alive in you, Harry, and shows himself most plainly when you have need of him."
That's a pretty excellent one as well. I mean, yeah. Is there any particular reason you picked that quote? Just
the notion of, regardless of if you believe in theism in any sort of way or believe in a sort of afterlife, because to me, thinking that we just die and that's it is very depressing.
Me too. Yes.
And so I prefer to take the position that our consciousness does exist in some capacity, even if we cannot interact with the physical realm.
We are of a similar line of thinking. So.
Alrighty then. And did you have any other thoughts or notes about Prisoner of Azkaban?
I'm just going to do a quick flip through the book again just to see if I highlighted anything. I think it was, again, the books always surprise me with how much can happen in a chapter, how quickly if I don't read something, like, or if I just start checking out, I definitely have to go back and make sure I got it, because obviously I'm going to miss something. I think it'll be interesting to see where, as we're getting closer to the teenage years of the Golden Trio, to see how they progress and kind of the different challenges that faces. Because it's basically, I feel like this is probably the last, like, let's face it, they haven't really acted like kids that much ever, but this is definitely the last kind of, even remotely, kind of kid vibe that I feel like we're gonna see. I don't know, but that's what I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Did you have any final thoughts?
No, I think that is it for me. Thank you so much for finishing Prisoner of Azkaban with us, everyone. And tune in next week, and we're going to start Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire with chapters 1 and 2, The Riddle House and The Scar. Catch you guys later. Bye.